my great privilege and blessing to be engaged in worship with you this morning. Thankful for, as the old brethren used to say, one more time in his house that we've been given to come before him and to tell him how thankful we are for him and how much he has done for our soul. I'd like to direct your mind this morning to the first chapter of 2 Corinthians. And there's a thought contained therein that I'd like to talk about. I'm not particularly sure how this got on my mind. I hadn't thought about this in quite some time. But there is a verse, it's verse 10, that you hear quoted and talked about a lot. Unfortunately, though what is said about it is very true, I don't believe it's what the verse is talking about. It's verse 10. It says, "Who delivered us from so great a death, and doth deliver, in whom we trust that he will yet deliver us." A lot of times when that verse is referenced or mentioned, you hear a man or somebody talk about how we were dead in trespasses and sins, and that God has saved us or delivered us from that great death, that he doth deliver here in this present time. He still quickens people by his life-giving voice, and that he will yet deliver us at one day in the future. In the resurrection, he will raise our mortal bodies, incorruptible, to be fashioned like unto his glorious body, to be changed in the resurrection forever and evermore. Obviously, if you have listened to me preach over the last 5.5 years, you know I believe that. Those are obviously the bread and butter concepts of what we as Old Baptists believe the Bible to teach about our salvation. However, if that is what this verse is saying, if that's what it's talking about, we have a problem. Because in verse 11, Paul follows that up by saying, "Ye also helping together by prayer for us." So for whatever he's talking about in verse 10, he says in verse 11 that we help one another in this regard. So let's actually get this entire thought and let's talk about it. The Lord be our helper this morning, because I believe as grand a subject as it is, that we've been saved from our sins, made alive in Christ, will one day be raised into His glory forever. As glorious as that is, there is a glorious thought contained in this lesson, I do believe. This is actually part of one big sentence. It's a sentence that starts in verse 8 and ends in verse 11. So let's read the entire sentence that Paul has under consideration. He says, "For we would not, brethren, have you ignorant of our trouble which came to us in Asia, that we were pressed out of measure, above strength, inasmuch that we despaired even of life. But we had the sentence of death in ourselves, that we should not trust in ourselves, but in God, which raiseth the dead, who delivered us from so great a death, and doth deliver, in whom we trust that he will yet deliver us, ye also helping together by prayer for us, and that for the gift bestowed upon us by the means of many persons, thanks may be given by many on our behalf." Paul is here in this opening portion of his second epistle to Corinth telling them basically in a quick summary what has happened to him since his last visit. He said, since my last epistle, I've encountered a great many things. He said, some of them you may have even heard about. You may have even heard reports of. And a lot of times in life, we hear reports of things and we hear about how bad things are. And then when we hear from the person that it happened to, they say, "It wasn't as bad as you heard it was. It was not as bad as people made it out to be." But here, Paul says, whatever you heard about our circumstance, it was just that bad. He said, we were at this place and we were going to die. He said, we had the sentence of death in ourselves, so much that we even despaired of life. You ever seen people who are, they think they've come to the end of their way, they think that their life is failing them, and they have this to say, they say, "Well, my number's up." In other words, they have reconciled themselves to the fact that they are about to leave this earth, they're about to leave this life, they say, "This is it." They have despaired even of life. All hope that they're going to be saved and delivered is taken away, and they have resigned themselves to the fact that they're going to die. Well, friends, Paul was in that situation on many times, and he talks about one of them here in Asia, where this great trouble came unto them. Now, I'm not sure exactly which trouble in Asia he has under consideration. If you read the book of Acts, he had several. He was put in jail several times. He was beaten many times. He was threatened to be executed many times. But I do personally believe and this is just my personal opinion, you don't like it, you can throw it out. I do believe that on this occasion, Paul is talking about what happened to him in Acts 14 and 15, whenever he was stoned and left for dead. You know, when Paul was dragged out of the city and stoned and left for dead, I'll give you another personal opinion of mine. I'm in a good mood this morning. I'm giving you a lot of my thoughts that I can't really prove by Scripture. I do believe that on that occasion, when Paul was stoned and left for dead, I do believe for a short time he died. I do personally believe that. Because later on in 2 Corinthians, he's going to talk about when he was caught up to paradise, into the third heaven, and heard unspeakable words which were not lawful for man to utter. Well, friends, for you and I to get to paradise, for you and I to get to heaven, if the Lord hadn't come back, how do we get there? We have to die. And when Paul was caught up to paradise into the third heaven and saw those things and heard those things, I believe it was back when he was stoned and left for dead. Why did they leave him for dead? Because he wasn't breathing. They said, well, he's dead. We've done what we thought we were going to do. But then the Lord revives him. He stands up on his feet. He goes right back into the city that stoned him and starts preaching all over again. And here Paul says, we had this trouble in Asia. We had the sentence of death in ourselves. We were marked men. We were men who were told, if you do this, you're going to die. If you continue in this way, we're going to kill you. They even stoned him and left him for dead. And Paul said, we had that sentence upon us. We pretty much knew that if nothing happened, we were going to die. And he says, but God, who raiseth the dead, has delivered us from so great a death. He says, and even as I'm writing this at this present hour, he says, he doth deliver. I'm still here. And he's writing this, as you go on in 2 Corinthians to find out, with the expectation that he's going to see them again. And he said, and we trust that he will yet deliver us. We trust that we're going to keep on being delivered until we see you again. And he says, and if you want to know how to do that, he says, you're already doing it. Ye helping together by prayers for us, that thanks may be given by many on your behalf. Here Paul is describing, though it's not the salvation of God's people from their sins unto glory, what he's describing is the deliverance that we have in our care and our fellowship one for another. You know, you and I have a great responsibility this morning. You know what that responsibility is too? It's not just to God. We have a responsibility to one another as well. When I was, the day I was baptized, the day I joined the church, when I came up out of the water and I changed clothes, my father was the one who baptized me. Before we went back into the sanctuary for the congregation to shake hands, they were singing a song. He told me this. He said, son, you have never, from the day you came into this world, ever been your own man. He said, don't you forget that. He said, you wear our name. And everything you do, good or bad, is a reflection upon the name that you have. He said, but today, you're even less of your own man. He said, because you have joined yourself to those people in there and you wear their name. And what you do is a reflection upon their name, their character, and the integrity that people see them as. You know, one of the greatest reports that you can have out there about us is when people hear about a primitive Baptist, they say, so, you know, those are some of the most honest people in all the world. I've heard that over and over and over again. And friends, I pray that that reputation continues. Because it's a good reputation to have that you are an honest, upright person who pays your lawful debts and does not try to harm your fellow man. That's a good reputation to have. And I found out very quickly from my father that I bore a name, that name was something to be prized and treasured, and it was fellowship that I was responsible for. And Paul says, when it comes to our fellowship, one with another, God has blessed us in many regards to continue to be here to this present hour. Notice what Paul says in, I believe it's in Acts chapter 20. He says to the brethren at Ephesus, starting in verse. No, it's not Acts 20. It's Acts 20, 23. In Acts 23, Paul says, having obtained grace of God, he says, I continue unto this very day. But that's what Paul said to some brethren. He said, having obtained help and grace of God, he said, I continue unto this very day. Let me ask you a question. How are you still alive right now? How have you continued to this present hour right now? There's only one answer, friends. In Him we live and move and have our being. You and I live and move and have our being because God has blessed us with another day of life, another day of service, and another day to honor and to praise Him in our lives that we have here on earth. And what Paul says here is, he said, I thought that my number was up. He said, I thought that me and all my companions, he said, I thought we were goners. He says, but God has delivered us from so great a death. Now I want you to think about what he means there when he says so great a death. There's two connotations that you can have when he says so great a death. Normally we think of so great a death as being a death of really harsh consequences. You know, it's like being executed or put to death, and that might work because Paul's manner of execution was going to be rather harsh. But I want you to think about what a great death this would have been. Paul was a man who was blessed by God to do many things, the least of which was not to write more than half of the New Testament. Paul wrote 14 books of the Bible. Think about what a great treasure that is. Paul constituted hundreds of churches. Think about what a great blessing that was. He was a father to many young men in the ministry. What a great blessing that was. He didn't baptize all that many, but he was a great blessing in his writing, in his ministry, in his service, his exhortation, and his counsel. I want you to think about men that you've known. It doesn't have to be preachers, but think about men that you've known or women you've known who've been a great influence on your life. Maybe your mother, your father, maybe a sibling, maybe somebody else. Someone who's had made a profound difference on your life. Now think about what would have happened if that person had been cut short and their life had been taken and you didn't have the blessing of being with them to hear their counsel or to gain their wisdom anymore. That would have been a great death, friends, because you would have been separated from all that great, wonderful influence that they had on your life. And Paul was spared of God to continue to do a great work of service to His people. And friends, if you and I have been spared to this very hour, we need to thank God for our deliverance and for our blessing, and to say, I'm going to use the time that I've been given to glorify God and to honor Him for the time that He's given me. You know, you and I, a lot of times, I won't speak for you, I'm going to speak for myself. I waste a lot of time. How about you? Do you waste time? I think if we're all honest, we'll say we do. I waste a lot of time. And you know what troubles me every time I find out, when I sort of am aware again of how much time I've wasted, I think of what could I have done with that time that I've now lost and never gotten back. That's why Paul would tell us in Ephesians 5, he says, redeeming the time because the days are evil. We live in evil days. We live in days that if we are not careful and on our guard, we will waste more and more and more time. But Paul says, because these days are evil, he says, redeem them. That word redeem means to use them to the very best that you can in honor and service to God. God spared Paul's life. Though he thought he was about to die, God spared his life from a great death. Why? Because he had a great work in front of him. One of the great works that he has is to write this book that he's writing here before us. Friends, all these wonderful truths that we have in the book of 2 Corinthians would not have been... Now, I know God would have inspired somebody else to write it, but think about how much it meant to these people to have another letter from Paul. And friends, God spared Paul's life to continue that great work. God spared Paul's life to continue to serve God's people. And friends, if you and I are living and breathing right now, God has spared our lives to continue to serve Him while we live here in this present world. You and I have a great responsibility before us to serve Him and to serve one another, because God has delivered us even unto this present hour. And He does still deliver us. We're still going. And we trust that He will yet deliver us. How do we trust, friends, that our future is going to be bright? Let me ask you a question. When you think about the future, do you think of it as bright or gloomy? Be honest. If I was to ask for a show of hands, I imagine a lot of people would raise their hand for the gloomy and not for the bright. Am I right? You can nod. It's all right. I'm going to tell you, there's a lot of days we've been having today, in the last several months, years, that when I look at the future, it looks awful dark. It looks awful gloomy. Now, friends, I'm not going to leave you here. It's not the point of coming to church to feel bad about life. It's the point of coming to church to feel better about the Lord. But notice what Paul says. He says, and we trust that He will yet deliver us. How? Verse 11, he says, ye also helping together by prayer for us, that for the gift bestowed upon us by the means of many persons, thanks may be given by many on our behalf. Paul says the reason I'm so confident that we are going to be blessed in the future to continue to be delivered, he said, because I know you're praying for me. You're helping in that regard. I've been thinking quite a lot about prayer since our meeting in August, because that seemed to be one of the themes that we had at our August meeting, was a prayer and a peace. Friends, prayer is a great weapon that we have and a great defense that we have here in this earth. Because think about prayer. Think about what is actually transpiring when you pray. If you wanted to talk to the President of the United States this morning, do you think you could do it? I rather suspect you wouldn't be able to get through to him. I rather suspect before they got done with all of the background checks and all the security clearances to let you even approach the President, you'd have lost interest. I just can't fly to England and have an audience with the Queen of England. I can't go to any country and just hope that their ruler or their monarch is going to visit with me. But friends, when you and I pray, we are coming and meeting together with the King of this universe, with the God of all glory, with the ruler of His creation. We are meeting and talking with Him person to person. That's what prayer is. And yet, how many times do I approach prayer with an attitude that it may make a difference, it may not? Friends, prayer helps. Prayer is important because we're meeting with God Himself. We're talking with Him as a man talks to his friend. We're talking to Him and approaching unto one that by nature you and I have no right to approach unto. Friends, by nature you and I are the worms of the dust. We're the vilest of the vile, and yet He has made us something that is able to approach unto Him. You know what Paul says in Hebrews 11 and verse 6? He says, without faith it's impossible to please Him. But he that cometh to God must believe that He is, and that He is a rewarder of them that diligently seek Him. He that cometh to God must believe that He is, and that He's a rewarder of them that diligently seek Him. For you and I to pray, to come to Him, we've got to first say, yes, I believe that God exists, but also say, yes, I believe that God does hear our prayers. He does hear our supplications. He hears our cries and our petitions, and He cares and listens from heaven. Friends, that's important for us to consider, because whenever I go to the bower of prayer, whenever I go and pour out my heart before God, I want to do so with the knowledge and the fervency that God is looking down and listening and caring from heaven. And He is. Paul says, the reason I'm so confident that I'm going to continue to be delivered is because you're helping in this regard. You're praying for me. And he says, and I'm praying for you. And he said, the prayer that we have is that this gift may continue. He says, ye helping together by prayer for us, that for the gift bestowed upon us by the means of many persons, thanks may be given by many on our behalf. Paul says the reason this prayer is being heard, he said, because there's a gift. A gift that was given to one, but is for the blessing of many persons. Paul is not tuning his own horn. Paul is basically acknowledging that God has given him something. And I'm going to tell you something, friends. Any minister of the gospel who is truly called of God, if he's honest with himself, he knows that God has given him something. I have no way of being able to put this into words, but friends, I know down in the very bottom of my soul that my number one calling in life is to preach and to serve God's people. I know that. Nobody has to tell me that. I know that. I can feel it. I'm not always honorable with it. But friends, I know that. It's a gift that's been given. But you know, a gift that's been given, no gift that is ever given just to sit there and do nothing. You ever thought about that? What do we do with presents we don't like? They sit there and they do nothing. But friends, gifts that are given are meant to be used. And when God gives gifts, they are meant to be used. Paul had a gift that was meant to be used, to bless and to touch other people. And what these people were praying for, they prayed, Lord, let this gift continue to touch and go forth and bless Thy people. You all have been given gifts. We're all given talents, every man according to his several ability. And it should be our prayer that our gifts, our talents go forth and minister to those that they can be a blessing unto. You may say, well, I'm not a preacher. No, you may not be. You may say, well, I'm not of this and I'm not of that, and you may not be, but I'll tell you what we all are. We all are the called of God, the called of His people, the sheep of His heritage, who've been given the light of the understanding of what Jesus Christ has done for us. And friends, because you and I know what Jesus Christ has done for us, we have an obligation and example to live our lives so that the light is held high and is not over here and covered. When people look at me, they ought to see one who is a friend of God, one who is honoring God and praising God so that it would be a blessing to other people. Why is it that we let our light shine? It's not so that people would boast of us and what great people we were, but that rather people would see our good works and glorify our Father which is in heaven. Do you want your Father to be glorified? I do. I tell you, from the very moment that I realized how blessed I was to have the parents that I had, and I didn't always know that. I mean, I had cruel parents. I've already told you about how bad they were. They made us do things nobody else had to do. They were cruel. It's cruel and unusual punishment to drag children to 3-day meetings 4 weekends in a row. That's cruel and unusual punishment. My children get it too. But I mean, when I finally realized how blessed I was with the parents that I had, you know what I wanted to do? I wanted to show them how thankful I was for them. How much more, now that we've been blessed to know what our Father has done for us, to show Him how thankful we are for what He's done for us. I tell you, I talked to a fellow this past week. I was in a training class, and the instructor, he was... I've been gotten onto for saying this in a demeaning way. I'll just say he was a Yankee and leave it at that. How about that? And Brother Stephen was in the training class too. And I don't know why everybody in the class, all those shop hands, felt like pointing out that I was a preacher. I mean, I was like, pick on him. He's right over there. There's Brother Stephen. Pick on him. But he pointed out that I was, and the guy wanted to ask me a few questions. And it was the same standard thing when he asked me what I was. I told him a permanent Baptist. He said, well, I've never heard of one of those. He said, what do y'all believe? And I said, do you want the short answer? And he said, sure. I said, the short answer is we believe that God saves and man has done nothing to merit it or to gain it. He goes, well, I believe that. I said, you do? I said, you believe that nothing that man does has any impact on eternity? He said, well, I didn't say that. I said, I believe that nothing that man does has impact on him getting into heaven. God does all of that work. And he goes, oh, I don't think I can believe that. I said, I didn't think so. And he said, well, let me ask you a question. He said, if you really believe that, he said, how do you want to live your life? I said, what do you mean? He said, well, if going to heaven is taken care of, he said, how do you want to live your life? I said, to His glory, His praise, and His grace. And he said, don't you want to go out and do anything else? I said, no, because when I realized the fullness of what that means, that I was nothing and less than nothing, and He is everything, and He has brought me up to where He is and made me something of Himself, I don't want to do anything that's displeasing to Him. I still do, but I don't want to. Friends, I want to go forward in the power of His might, and I want to live a life that honors and glorifies Him. And friends, that should be our desire, that when other people see us, they say, look at what great friends of God they are. God is a great God who has blessed them in such a way, and look how they honor Him. And they glorify God on our behalf. And Paul said, that is what the point of all this is. Now, another thing that Paul mentions here, he says that prayer has helped in the regard that it has spared our life. This same fella, at one of our breaks, and I want to talk about this too, and every time I get posed with this, it just blows my mind. Because on the one hand, you have somebody that is so works-based and so means-based on how we get to heaven, but on the other hand, they can be so fatalistic about things. He said, he was telling a story, and the class we were taking, ironically enough, was arc flash hazard prevention, which is basically how you prevent these bad electrical shocks and blasts from burning you really bad. He talked about a man he knew that had been burned really bad and had died in a burn wound. And he looked at me and said, preacher, there's just one thing to say. When your number's up, your number's up. And when it's your time to go, you're going to go. And there's nothing you can do about it, nothing that can stop it. And I looked at him and I said, are you telling me that you and I have an appointed time to die? He said, absolutely. We've got a time that will be punched one day and we can't change it. I said, then why are you teaching this class? He said, what are you talking about? I said, why tell people to be safe when it comes to electricity? When their number's up, their number's up. It doesn't matter what they did. He goes, oh, that's foolish. I said, how? It can't change when you're going to die. Why do anything to be safe? Why look both ways when you cross the road? Why put on your blinker when you go to turn? Why stop at a stop sign? When your number's up, your number's up. I'm going to tell you something, friends. Our lives can be cut short by our actions. Our lives can be extended by our actions. I can tell you, friends, when you've got friends that are sick and friends that are afflicted and you pray that God would bless them to be restored to their health and God restores them, you thank God for extending and lengthening their lives. We have Bible ground for that, friends, because it happened to Hezekiah. It has happened to other men. And I do believe with all of my being that it's happened to me. I'm one who should be dead because I've done many things that should have killed me. But friends, there are people who are praying for me And it helped, and God blessed my life to be spared and to go forward because God's people, my parents, others that loved me, prayed for me, and it helped to extend and lengthen my life. And Paul says, you keep on praying that this be extended. Now, very quickly, I want to bring all this together and point us to the ultimate future. When you think about the ultimate future, and you think about God delivering us, I don't ever want you to fall into the trap that I have fallen into before. There have been times that I have prayed, and friends, the whole point of this is prayer, because all this deliverance and all this story that Paul is telling, it all gets back to prayer. That prayer helps, and that the ultimate end of prayer is that thanks may be given by many on our behalf. Whenever you pray, don't be like I've been, because when I pray, I give God what I'm praying for, and then I give Him all the subpoints of how it is that He's supposed to do this. Lord, I need this, please do this, and do this, and then this, and then this, and then this. When you fix this problem, do it this way, and follow it up by this, and follow it up by that. And I'm not trying to be spiteful. I'm not praying that other people, you know, get their just deserts, but I'm basically telling God how to do it, how to answer my prayer. Friends, when God answers prayer, He answers it His way, at His discretion, according to His will and in His time. My prayer should always be hinged on the fact, Lord, bless me to be aligned to Your will. Not my will, but Thine be done. If there was anybody who ever walked this earth who could have prayed in such a way to say, honor my will, who would it have been? Jesus Christ. And I'll tell you something, friends. Jesus Christ was not of a different mind than His Father, but He shows us the perfect example in prayer. He says, nevertheless, not what I will, but Thy will be done. Our Lord showed us the perfect example of that when He prayed. A lot of times when we pray, we want a certain thing. And when we don't get the certain thing, we think, well, prayer didn't help. Prayer did help. It just may have not come in the way that we want it. You know, I won't tell any names or give you any names because I'm not sure I'm supposed to. But I know a couple who they found themselves without a job. The man was laid off. They had two children. And they prayed to God fervently that He would bless him to find a job. And eventually a job opened up and it required them to move 5 states away where there were no churches. And basically they were leaving their family, they were leaving the church, they were leaving everything to go up and take this job. And here's what he said. He says, I have to go. He says, I have to take it because I have to work. Now, all of that makes good logical natural sense, doesn't it? I mean, if you were laid off and you didn't have employment and your family needed to eat, and if you got a job offer, you'd say, well, that's something I have to do. And he was counseled by his pastor, who was not me. He was counseled by his pastor, by his family, and everything. Please wait. You know, we'll try to help and do what we can and help look for you. We'll try to, you know, buy groceries, whatever. There's no reason to take your family where the church is not and take them away from everything just so that you'll have a job. But he went anyway. And no sooner had he got up there and been settled in and been working for about a month, two companies from the area that he lived in were looking for somebody. And they were looking for him because they actually called him and said, we're willing to offer you a job without an interview, sight unseen, because we know what you can do. All that happened 1 month later. Still in the same town, with the church, with the family, with everything else, but he wasn't willing to wait for a month and ended up having a really tough time up where they moved to. Now, I told that story to tell you this. In my life, there have been many times that I have prayed, and the answer was not yes, and the answer was not no. The answer was wait. The answer was wait. Be still and know that I am God. What does the psalmist say in Psalm 46? In Psalm 46, the psalmist has this to say. It helps me remember what the future holds. If I can get there. In Psalm 46, I believe it's about verse 10. It is verse 10. Psalm 46 and verse 10, he says, be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the heathens. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. Friends, I want to tell you, no matter how we feel, no matter what blows life is dealing to us, God is still with us. He will never leave us nor forsake us, and God is still with us. But so many times the reason I don't feel His presence, the reason I don't know that He's near is because I have not been still and known that He is God. When you look at all that's going on out there, when you look at all the evil forces that are raging, all the evil influences that are going on, do you still believe in your heart of hearts that God is above and ruling over all that? I do. Because friends, one day He is going to have His say and He's going to be exalted in this earth when judgment goes forth unto all the heathen. God is going to have His say. You know, a lot of times I sit there and I pray to God and say, Lord, how long? How long, O Lord? Lord, come and deliver us. Lord, come and save us. You know what the answer is? Wait. My day is coming. My day is coming. My day of salvation. My day of judgment. My day of redemption. It's coming. And I have to wait sometimes. There's times when ministers have a crisis of their soul and they have to wait on the Lord to get an answer and a direction on what they're going to say and what they're going to do. Sometimes in our lives we're faced with decisions and crossroads and we may think, I've got to make a decision now. Friends, whenever you're posed with something that seems like the answer has to be made now, let me tell you something, that's probably Satan influencing and pushing the situation. Because most decisions in life don't have to be made right this second. Now, if you're a doctor, I grant you, you have decisions that have to be made now. When I worked for the power company, there were decisions that had to be made now because people get mad when they don't have electricity. I've never understood that. Didn't have it for thousands of years, but now that we have it, if you ain't got it, people get mad. But anyway, moving on. Most of our life, we have to wait to be still and to know that I am God. And sometimes after we've waited a while and the Lord answers and the Lord delivers, it still doesn't look like what we thought it should look for. Notice how Paul says this. I'm going to read verse 11 one more time. He says, 2 Corinthians 1:11, he says, ye also, helping together by prayer for us, that the gift bestowed upon us by the means of many persons, thanks may be given by many on our behalf. I've told you before that a lot of times as a minister, I'm not sure what it is proper and right for me to say and what's not. You don't know when you've told too many stories. You don't know when you've told too few. You don't know when you've illustrated the point well enough or illustrated it too much. And if this goes too far on the other side, y'all please cast a mantle of charity over me because I don't know any better example or illustration to close the sermon with. 15 years ago, the greatest personal gift as far as spiritual instruction in my life was about to be taken away. And much like these people who were praying for Paul, I prayed for this man that he would be delivered and that God would bless him to be restored and I would continue to enjoy that gift that had been bestowed upon many yet again. He was my father. And it got to the point in my prayers, through all of his pain and his suffering, that my prayer had to be altered. Because for so long, because he'd been battling this for 2 years, and for so long I'd been praying, Lord, bless him to get better. Lord, bless him to get up. Bless him to do this again. Bless him to do that again. I was telling the Lord how to deliver my father. And finally I had to just stop and say, Lord, deliver him. I just said, Lord, deliver him, and thy will be done. And it was not long after that he left us and he went to glory and he's been there ever since. That was 15 years ago. And I think sometimes about what it would be like to still have him on earth now. I think about what it would be like to have that gift to listen to. I tell you, as a minister, there's been times when I've been dealing with a scriptural problem or a pastoral problem or anything. I'd love to pick up the phone and call him and say, how would you handle this? Or what do you think about this? But friends, I'm going to tell you something. As much blessing as it would be to me personally to have him here, I can stare at you this morning and tell you I don't want him here. Because he has been blessed and delivered above measure. And you look in the future, you may have dark days and you may have hard times. But in life and in death, you're going to be a victor. Because in life, your gift and your blessing is blessed to continue. You're blessed to be able to help others. And thanks may redound to God by many on your behalf. But if you're blessed, and it sounds strange, but if you're blessed to die, you'll be blessed above measure to go to a place where there is no more pain. There are no more tears or crying or sorrow or distress. And you'll be blessed above measure, giving thanks and perfection forever. Either way, you're going to be a winner. And friends, prayer helps. Because I'm going to tell you something. It was hard to watch him suffer. It was hard to watch him in pain. But friends, as bad as it was for him to go, it was a blessing and a deliverance, and prayer helped. that God had delivered him and delivered him into glory. And I'm going to tell you this also. You and I are the only people that I know of that can look at death with joy. You look at people out there and they don't see death with joy. They see it with overmuch sorrow. But friends, we understand that death is the greatest deliverance that we have in this old world. We understand that death releases us from all the problems and all the burdens and hindrances and heartaches that we have. I tell you, one of God's greatest mercies was found in judgment. Because back in the very beginning, when God basically cursed man, cursed woman, cursed the snake, cursed the ground, cursed everything, what did He say? He says amongst Himself, He says, "And now, lest now that man has become as one of us, to know and discern between good and evil," He said, "lest he put his hand forth to the tree of life and live forever," He said, "let us bar it." And He put a sword that turned every way around the tree of life and a cherubim or an angel that stood there guarding it day and night. I want you to think about that. What would have happened if Adam and Eve had eaten of the tree of life in the state that they were in? They had already sinned. They had already died in trespasses and sins. And they already had bodies now that were going to suffer corruption. What would happen if you ate the tree of life? Friends, you and I would live forever in the misery and the ruin that we have here in this world. It was a great blessing of God that He has blessed us to die. It's a great blessing of God that He's blessed us to leave all these problems and not be bothered by them anymore. Friends, I know people that have prayed to live to be 100. I don't pray that prayer. You know why? Because I've lived 35 years and it's been misery and sorrow for a lot of my pilgrimage. I feel like Jacob when he stood before Pharaoh and Pharaoh said, "Well, how old are you?" Now, I don't feel like this. He said, "I'm 137 years old." No, I don't feel like that. He says, "Few and evil have been the days of the years of my pilgrimage." Friends, the days of the years of my pilgrimage have been few and evil. And it's a blessing by God to get to leave all this and go home and be at rest. And one way or another, in life or in death, you and I are going to be winners. And we need to pray for one another and pray with one another and help one another that we may thank God for the mutual blessing that He gives to us. Because if He blesses us to stay together, we're blessed in our lives to serve Him together. And if He blesses us to leave this life, He's blessed another one of us to go home. And either one of those, friends, is a winner. Either one of those is a blessing. Either one of those is worthy of praising Him because in life and in death, He's with us, He blesses us, and He's worthy of our thanks in all things. And I tell you, friends, whenever you and I live life together, let it be with the mutual thanksgiving and the help of prayer that we would be a blessing to one another, we'd be a blessing to the world we live in, and that we'd be ultimately bringing glory and honor to Almighty God because He's blessed us all of our days in the past. He's continuing to bless us right now, and one way or another, He's going to continue to bless us in the future, in this life and in the life to come. And that is worthy of our thanks, with all of our being, for all of our days, for His great mercy and His great goodness unto us. Friends, He's been far better to me than I even remotely deserve. In all of my problems and all of my shortcomings, He continues to uphold me. He continues to bless me. He continues to let me know that I am near. Friends, just to be able to come into His house and to feel His sweet peace rush in, that's worth more than anything life can give you. Because that's the blessing of heaven blowing down from heaven and saying, "I am still here." And friends, He's still here. Let us honor and bless Him in the days that we have left in service to Him and one another. May the Lord bless you.